800-450-7876. Class is in session. Neely Fuller Jr. is in the classroom. Dr. Neely Fuller Jr., how are you feeling, sir?
I'm still learning.
And that we all are, still learning. Class is about to get started. I want to ask you about your concept of the code. How did you come up with the concept of the code? When did you figure that out? And if you can break it down to us, because a lot of people now, you know, they talk about racism, white supremacy. That, of course, is something, that phrase that you coined. But you also talked about the code, and that's the title of your best-selling book, or the subtitle, the short title, I should say, of the book. But they don't understand fully how the code works. So can you tell us first how you came up with that concept of the code?
Well, it's a simple concept. Anything in the universe that works is codified. Well, some people use the term codified, which means what? Means every time you do it, it works. And it's what black people don't have is a counter-racist code. The racists have a code. That's why every move that they make works. They don't do a lot of head-scratching, trying to figure things out. When they put that package together called the System of White Supremacy, they codified it. They didn't do it right away. It was probably like most projects that start, from scratch. They are really kind of ragged. Everything, every project, everything that people start, everything that shows up in the universe probably starts kind of chaotic. But little by little, it becomes, if people, become focused and clear in what it is they're trying to do, they have to be focused and have to be very clear on what it is they're trying to do. Otherwise, an absence of clarity and focus means chaos. So the white supremacists, who are looking for a way to manipulate people and have a lot of power, and decided to do it on the basis of color, when they first started out, they probably made a lot of mistakes in what they were trying to do, like people who are experimenting with anything. But in record time, probably faster than anyone who has ever worked on any kind of political project and religious project, trying to establish a religion or trying to establish a political system of any kind. Political means something dealing with people down through history. They became successful at it by codifying what they did. Probably not starting out, just they started out just doing a little bit of this and a little bit of that, trial and error, and then they start writing things down. And then they start trying the things that they would write. This is a hypothesis, in other words, an idea of mine, of how white supremacy got started. Because that's what we're supposed to be talking against now and acting against and trying to replace it with a better system. But finally, they got it codified. And it seems like they did it, according to everything that I've read in history, they did it in record time. And it moved faster than any other political or religious system in recorded history. And its efficiency is extremely efficient. So efficient that there's no political system that's been more efficient than what it set out to do in recorded history, from what I can see, than the system of white supremacy. So it was codified, meaning they figured out what works and what doesn't work.
Right. Let me jump in and ask you this, though.
If we're going to counter white supremacy, we have to figure out what works and what doesn't, and drop what doesn't work. We have a hard time not doing that. And just go with what works and keep coming up with new stuff, because it's going to take new stuff. The old stuff ain't working. anything, everything we've tried so far hasn't worked. It's sloppy. It's as sloppy as it can be. It's not codified.
Well, we come up on a break, but I got to ask you this question, Neely Fuller Jr. How do they get it to work? Because white folks, you say they have a code, but if they're in Finland, if they're in New Zealand, if they're in the UK, they're in Alabama, in San Francisco, they stay on code. Is it instinctive, or is it how can you put your finger on it? You know, because we sit here and we try to figure out our brothers and sisters in all these different places on the planet, and we're all treated the same way. And it seems like they have a roadmap or something to say, this is how we're going to react to them. So we're going to take the break. When we come back, if you can explain, did they sit down or is it just, how do they figure it out? And, you know, because many of us haven't figured out that they use a code on us. So if you can explain that to us when we get back from the short break, we'd appreciate it. Folks, you want to join this conversation, class is in session. Raise your hand by dialing us up at 800-450-7876. Your call's next on FM 95.9 and AM 1450. WOL, where information is power.
Listen to the Carl Nelson Show now on our free mobile app.
And thanks for rolling with us, folks. I guess it's Neely Fuller Jr. discussing the code. He says we need a code. He says the other folks have a code. So Neely Fuller Jr., help us out. I mentioned that they're all in all these different countries and they don't look like us. They have a code. They treat us a certain way, and it seems to work all the time. That's what you said is codified. The behavior is, at least. How did they come together? How do all these people all over the planet who don't look like us act in unison when it comes to us?
Well, the white supremacists dominate all the people who are classified as non-white. So they have a code that enable them to do that. People sometimes refer to the numbers of white supremacists are very few. They are royal clique. They are gangster operation. And they just have all the non-white people, the people that they classify as non-white, dancing on their string. They're master puppeteers. And how do you get to do that? Because you have a code that's designed for you to do that. And you don't deviate from your code. But non-white people will argue about everything except structuring how they go about defeating racism. Now, we are non-white people all over the world, and in the Northwestern Hemisphere, for example, so that people can get some clarity about what I'm trying to say. Musicians, people who read music. We have musicians today who can read music. Reading music is codified. Reading music, writing music, that's a code. Every time you hit that piano key, somebody who is a musician, and I am not, I just appreciate how it sounds. That's about all I know about it. But somebody who is really can play several instruments. Many black people play several instruments. They are very intense about it. They are very dedicated to it. They study. They sit up and burn midnight oil studying. Is this the key of G or whatever it is, or this is F minor? Now, I don't know what they're talking about, but they do. It's a code, and it works every time you do it. I don't care where in the world you are. Now, we can understand that when it comes to music. We can understand that when it comes to a lot of things. But when you say we have to codify every move that we make when it comes to racism and codify a counter-racist code, we come up blank, and I'm talking about we. I'm talking about people who are supposed to be super scholars. Everybody has failed because we haven't even attempted to make a code. We think they can just run out there and just do any kind of old thing, clap our hands, get a tattoo, get another hairdo, jump up and down. You know, we think that we can use a dancing code in the people who are called Native Americans or Indians or indigenous people. They thought that having that as a part of their code would work. It did not. They would have what you call a war dance, and, you know, the dance was codified. It was precise, and everybody knew their place in the dance. But when it came to trying to do something about that wagon train that was coming through, they didn't have that codified at all. The code was sloppy, and it failed. Now, black people, people who are classified as Afro-black, Afrocentric, Afro-this and Afro-that, in the Northwestern Hemisphere and throughout the world, we completely fall apart when it comes to codifying or even think about codifying counter-racist science. Racism is a science, like music is a science. Anything that works is a science. You do a certain thing. You're sitting at a piano. Fats Waller, Earl Hines, John Legend, Ray Charles, blind. But when he sits at a piano, Stevie Wonder, they know that code. And they, I've heard a story about Mr. Ray Charles that when he sat at a piano and he's got an orchestra that he's not even looking at because he can't see, but he knows when that second violin, and somebody told me this, I don't know, you know, it's just secondhand information, that Mr. Charles could get up after that session and say, that second violin player, you need to tell him something, because he did a couple of things there that are definitely not codified for me when I'm sitting at that piano, because I want things done a certain way, a certain kind of way. I know that Ray Charles sound. He ain't got it. So get him on the ball, let him talk to me if he, you know, get it together. I can tell him what to do. I mean, you know, I ain't playing the violin. He is. But, I mean, he's got to know what to do. That bass player got to know what to do. Now, I went a long way around it to explain it, but I'm trying to get people year after year to understand that what we need is to codify counter-racism. And we can wrap this thing up almost overnight. That we've been dragging for years, because we'll codify everything, dance steps, everything. Black tap dancers and whatnot say, hey, man, you ain't quite got it right. I mean, it's a couple of things there. I mean, you're doing most of what you should be doing, but now it's a couple of things you need to learn, and I'll show you. Now back off the stage and let me get up here and show you. Mr. Bojangles Robinson, I understand, could do that. Everything that's successful is codified. But when it comes to fighting racism, black people foaming at the mouth, making every type of speech you can name, cursing people out, demonstrating, turning over cars, nothing codified. Nothing. I mean, you know, and what you call a code ain't even worth mentioning. The little bit that we do have codified, it ain't worth mentioning because it hasn't worked. And, you know, the little bit that does work, we do have a little, you know, get a little spurt of logic, because that's all it is, every now and then, and say, yeah, that worked. But, you know, then we forget about it. And we don't try to collate it with a lot of other things, because that's all it is. You take the part that works discard the part that doesn't work, and then take all the parts that work, and then synchronize them. This is how you get a machine gun in a war, to fire right through a propeller, even back in World War II. Couldn't do it in World War I. They hadn't figured out how to codify that. But they call it synchronization. It's the same way in music, why you have that S-Y, synchro, synchronization, meaning everything is in harmony. Everything is in step. You move from this to this, and then from this to this. And, you know, and you do it, you practice doing it. You make mistakes. Oh, yeah, people, all musicians will tell you. You hit a chord sometime, or whatever they call it, that you shouldn't have hit. Say, yeah, man, and the saxophone player will tell the trumpet player, say, yeah, man, I heard you when you did that. I heard that from way over there where I was, even though this is a 70-piece orchestra. But you were so off key, man. I mean, you know, and they'll all laugh about it, but then they'll say, this ain't no laughing matter. I mean, you know, we're supposed to be performing, okay? It's the same way, folks, with doing any kind of business. A computer is codified. That's the first thing I heard, the terms that I heard. I heard something about a hollerith. Those are the first, and I don't know nothing about computers. It passed me by. I didn't get none of that codified. But learning the alphabet is code. A, B, C, D, children, you know. Now repeat after me. Now you don't know what the A is or what the V is or the C. You're just repeating after the teacher. But little by little, the teacher will just keep easing stuff in there. And easing stuff in there. Next thing you know, you not only know your ABCs, you're writing a book. I know a little bit about that because that's what I did. But I didn't start out doing that. But there is a code for what they call language. Everything that works is codified, folks. I'm talking to the whole world now because Mr. Carl Nelson has asked me to, or the people in New Zealand and all like that. When it comes to dealing with racism, meaning the white supremacists.
Right. Hold that thought right there because we got to take a short break, Neely. Hold that thought right there. I'll let you expound on that on the other side. Some folks want to talk to you. Got a tweet question for you as well. Folks, you want to join this conversation with Neely Fuller Jr., raise your hand by dialing this up at 800-450-7876, and we'll take your calls after this quick break right here on FM 95.9 and AM 1450 WOL, where information is power. This is Neely Fuller Jr. Call up for a couple of your friends. Tell them that Neely Fuller Jr. is on the radio. They'll thank you for it for sure. And if you've got a question, raise your hand by dialing us up at 800-450-7876. And just remind you, you got to listen real keenly because he uses logic, cause and effect, and he uses a lot of metaphors. So it's not one of these shows you kind of halfway listen. You got to put your ear all the way into that speaker. And Neely Fuller Jr., I got a tweet question for you. The tweeter says that... He says, white folks will fight each other, but will stop and come together to beat us. Do you think that black people are too emotional and too petty? Because we are the only people talking inclusion.
If I understand the question, what is it that black people are doing? In other words, when it comes to race, we have shown that we are opposed to it in theory. But what we really do on a daily basis is where our interest is. We are interested in race because it's just forced on us on a daily basis, and we deal with it at that level. Like running away from a fire rather than trying to put the fire out. And so we're just trying to dodge it. And that's basically the mode that the people of color are in when it comes to racism all over the world. So what is it that's the basis for why we just can't move to another stage? We all say we oppose the racism, and we are definitely very loquacious, meaning I've been told, know how to talk. I do a lot of talking. Black people can do a lot of talking about how much we don't like it. But what are we really interested in on a daily basis, minute by minute? We're really not interested in racism. Some black people will say that. They will be honest about it without knowing that they're being honest. They say, I don't want to be talking about that racism. You know, I get tired of talking about racism. Everywhere you turn, people just talking about racism this, racism that, the white man this. I'm busy, man. I got other things to do. Now, that's where the key is. All over the world, black people have not made racism their priority, their reason for being. Like if you join the paratroopers, you're all in. I mean, you're a paratrooper. Any Marine will tell you, you join the Marines, you're supposed to be all in as a Marine, all in. No part of you is supposed to be left out. You ain't got no other program other than being a Marine. Otherwise, you ain't got no business being in the Marines. But black people have other business. Now, in answer to the question, the core answer to that question, if I understand the question, what are black people more interested in than they are anything else? And the code says, what I have written in my analyzation for the code, and it's in the textbook for Victims of White Supremacy, black people are more interested in showing off to each other than they are interested in anything else on this planet or off of this planet or in outer space or in heaven above or hell below. Black people have more interest in showing off to each other in some way, form, or another than they have in anything else that you can name. And that is their worldwide crippling defect. Not solving problems. We have no interest in solving problems except when that problem solving is connected with some type of show-offism. In the textbook for Victims of White Supremacy says that there are four types, four forms of it that you can get to by going to producejustice.com. You'll see it in the textbook, the forms that it takes. And that is black people's biggest drawback when it comes from not only not having a code, but not really being focused on countering and eliminating racism as the reason for being. Whereas the white supremacists, their whole reason for being, for existing, is white supremacy. They have no other reason for even existing. This is why they're in such opposition to anybody changing it. Because if you take white supremacy away from a white person who believes in white supremacy, you've taken everything. You haven't just taken something. And it's the same way with black people. You take away the ability for a black person to show off to another black person, that black person is now suicidal. Really. And that's anywhere in the world. We are more interested in strutting around impressing each other some kind of way, even if it just means throwing a brick into a crowd, or even if it means shooting into a crowd. That's just another way of showing off to other black people. That's why black people look forward all their lives, drop out of school, get five jobs, if it need be, to get a 9mm so they can what? Load up that 9mm and do what? go and shoot into a crowd of other black people in order to accomplish what? Is anybody going to pay you for that? No. It's to show off. Man, you see how I busted them? Man, I emptied a clip into him. I busted him, didn't I? You know, rolling his eyes at me like that. See, all about showing off. Showing off to whom? To each other and to yourself. And you know what that's worth, folks? Absolutely nothing. All of it put together. After you do all of it. Spend a lifetime doing it. Spend a whole lot of time in jail as a result of it. It's absolutely, on the world scale, when you compare it to the accomplishments of the white supremacists, it's worth nothing at all. But we'd rather not be alive if we couldn't do that. Show off to each other. Strutting around any kind of way. Getting the attention of another black person and say, I got his attention, one way or another. Even if it cost me my life or cost the lives of 500,000 other black people. So what? I got a chance to show off to other black people. And for what? It makes me feel good. And we're that way all over the world. Truth be told. Stop and think about it, people. Is that our priority? And then look at our behavior. Don't go by what Neely Fuller is saying at all. Because what he's saying on the surface sounds crazy. And it sounds crazy because when you look at what black people are actually doing, it is crazy. I mean, over the top crazy. We are the craziest people on the planet, next to the white supremacists. They're the craziest because they taught us how to be that way.
All right. We've got a bunch of folks who want to talk to you, Neely Fuller Jr. 800-450-7876. We'll start with Monica in Buffalo. Monica, on line two.
Hi. Hi,
yes,
Mr. Nelson. Can you hear me?
Go ahead. Sure.
Okay. Hi, Mr. Nelson. Hi, Mr. Fuller. I have a question. Something's been on my mind. I feel that too many black people in a society, they're just living too comfortable. And what I mean by comfortable is that, you know, we have cars, homes, money, you know, status. I've heard some of the scholars say we may need to suffer to in order for us to see change. So my question for you, Mr. Fuller, is do you feel that we're too comfortable under the system in 2021?
Lots of black people are not comfortable. Most people on the planet do not have material comfort, but they have just what I just got through saying. This is one reason people don't understand what I'm saying, even when they hear me say it. And the question that you just asked is connected with what I just said. Now, what did I just say? Black people are more interested in doing what? Showing off than anything else. So the black people who are riding around in the limousines and all like that, they're not trying to show off to white people. Because they know that they can't show off to white people. It ain't nothing that black people got that they can show off to white people. Nothing. Absolutely nothing in the system of white supremacy. So we show off to each other. So we are very uncomfortable, very dissatisfied, very angry. You're correct about that. When we don't have these things, because that's what the code lists. The code book says that. We show off things that we got from white people. And we show them off to whom? Not to white people. They're not impressed at all. We'll show them off to each other.
All right. Thank you, Monica.
Now stop and think about it. I just want the lady to stop and think about it.
Right.
Stop and
think. All right. Well, she does that.
Every black
we
got
to take a short break. So stay with us, Neely Fool. I'll let you finish up on responding to Monica. Monica, thank you for calling. We've got a bunch of other folks who got questions for you as well. You want to pose a question, Neely Fuller Jr.? Hit us up at 800-450-7876, and we'll take your calls for real next on FM 95.9 and AM 1450. WOL, where information is power. Thanks for staying with us, folks. Our guest is Neely Fuller Jr. As I mentioned, Neely Fuller Jr. It's one of these shows you got to listen to. You got to listen to, got to get your ear all the way in that speaker, you know, and you got to listen really, really keen because he uses logic, cause and effect, to prove his points. So before we go back to him, though, I just got a note from the newsroom that the jury has come back with a verdict in the Jussie Smollett case. It's a trial, I should say. So as soon as that verdict's announced, we'll let you know. Also, tomorrow's Friday, and we invite all of you to free your mind, think for yourself. And join us on our Open Phone Friday program. We begin at 4 p.m. Eastern time right here on FM 95.9 and AM 1450 WOL. Neely Fool Jr., I'm going to let you finish for your response to Monica's question, and then we got some more folks who want to talk to you as well.
Okay, I'm trying to move fast. I know I'm a little long-winded in giving some of my explanations, but I think it's necessary because codification is completely a new idea to most people, I think, from what people tell me. So, but I just want to say that the lady that called in, that was an excellent question. I appreciate that question because that gave me an opportunity to illustrate what I'm talking about, because she was saying black people are so busy, you know, admiring the things that they have. Well, that's on page 119, of the revised expanded edition of the textbook for victims of white supremacy that you can get by going to producejustice.com. I have the four basic show-offisms among the victims of racism, which are black people, all non-white people. And the first one is showing off to each other the things that white people have allowed them to obtain. And that is the truth, is according to me, because I wrote it. Now, that's either true or false, but that's the first one of the four. And I'll later on, maybe, if people ask me, I'll get to the other three. But on page 119, people who have the textbook for victims of white supremacy, the first page of the eighth area area of activity called Area 3, which is entertainment, which is what black people really aspire to be. See, because showing off is a form of entertainment. Entertainment is an essential part of a person's existence. Animals entertain each other. You know, entertainment is not anything that people should try to avoid and anything like that. People should have entertainment, but it is how you entertain yourself. Does it produce a constructive result? But I'll go on to the next question now.
All right, cool. And again, as mentioned from the newsroom, a verdict has been reached in the Jussie Smollett trial. And as soon as that verdict is read, we'll let you know. 800-450-7876. Walter's joining us. Walter's in D.C. on line 3. Walter, your question for Neely Fuller Jr. Is Walter there? All right, we just keep moving then. Let's go to line 4. Let's go to Ben in Long Beach. Ben? Walter, you there?
Walter's here.
Okay, go ahead, Walter. Your question for Neely Fuller Jr.
Yes. I was just explaining one thing. God created man out of five kinds of dust. You remember, white dust, black dust for bowels, green dust for auto complexion, red dust, and brown dust. That solved the whole problem. You know, racism does not pay, because you'll be there anyway. You know, how was soul popping?
Walter, I'm going to let you go because I don't understand the question. There's something wrong with your phone, but I thank you for your call. 800-450-7876. Ben's in Long Beach. He's on line 4. Ben, you have a question for Neely Fuller Jr.?
Yes, I do. But one of the many things that I've learned from the Carl Nelson show is that people don't change when they see the light, but they change when they feel the heat. And that's my response to Monica. But my question for the dear doctor is this. what is your secret to remaining young and healthy, especially in your 90s, especially with your healthy mental, intellectual capacity and ability? Because even in your 90s, you're able to roll with the best of them. So how do you do it? And I'll take the answer off the air. Thank you.
Oh, I don't consider myself as mentally or physically healthy. I try to eat correctly, and that's a part of the code. That comes under the first area of economics, first area of the code, of the first area of activity under economics in alphabetical order. In the textbook for victims of white supremacy, I put there, eat correctly and only as necessary. But it's taken me many years just to find the basics for that in the Northwestern Hemisphere by talking to people and listening to people and suffering from having consumed too much of the incorrect foods. I never did drink alcohol or smoke, simply because, not because I was pious or thought that, I'd been churchified maybe in such a way that I avoided those things, but simply because I didn't see where it was constructed. Even as a 13-year-old, I tried to smoke a cigarette once, and I said, this is smoke. And I had a little bit of logic, I guess, and not enough of the habit, because people told me, you have to keep trying to do it, Fuller. And I said, well, anything I got to work that hard to do. I mean, I can eat ice cream or a popsicle or something. I don't have to go through no training period. So I ain't going to do that with no cigarettes. So I just never got the habit. And I never drank a drop of alcohol, in the form of whiskey or gin or anything like that, simply because I was around the people who every Saturday night, it seemed like everybody was staggering around drunk and falling down and fighting and cursing and acting crazy. So at a very early age, it kind of terrified me. That was the reason. It was fear. It had nothing to do with I'm a goody-two-shoes, anything like that. So it kind of spilled over into the food thing late on when food started making me sick. I was eating a lot of cookies and cakes and sweets. And somebody told me that might be the source of my headaches. And so I stopped doing some of it, I say, a little too late. And I stopped getting headaches. I stopped drinking root beer sodas, which I thrived on at one time, and eating ice cream or root beer float in the hot summertime. What's wrong with that, I thought. But it just didn't work for me as I got older. When I was real young, I could do a lot of it. So I don't really have a secret. In fact, I would like to have a formula for the exact foods to eat and the exact foods not to eat. And considering all the rivers being poisoned and what food that the white supremacists are poisoning deliberately and giving it to black people, you got to take all that into consideration. And it's hard to keep up. So you just do the best you can. That's under what the code calls compensatory logic. Just do the best you can. I don't have a secret. I don't have a formula. I'm 92 years old. But I think my time is running out just from being worn out. And you can probably hear that in my voice. My voice is not anywhere as strong as it was 50 years ago. And you can see I'm hoarse all the time now. And another thing, my style of talking is not codified at all, because I sound like I'm preaching. I cannot stand to hear me on any kind of recording, because that is a no-no. I'm not a preacher. That's not the way to present codified material. You don't preach it, and you don't teach it. You just tell it. just talk. That's all. I got a terrible habit of sounding like I'm preaching.
Yeah, but you're effective, and that's what we need. 800-450-7876. Ali's calling from L.A. Ali is on line 5. Ali, your question for Neely Fuller Jr.
Hello, Mr. Nelson. Hello, Mr. Fuller. Thank you both for your efforts. Mr. Fuller, my question is, in your opinion, what will be a logical form of reparations for non-white black people in a system of racism, white supremacy?
Well, they're all listed. There's so many of them. Because you're talking about everything, every situation that you can possibly name should be codified, meaning you say something and you say it the exact same way every time. Why? Because it always works for you and not against you. That's when you know you're on code. And whatever you do, it works for you and not against you. And when I say you, I mean it solves a problem for you without making a problem for you or anybody else. Everything that you do is going to have a constructive result. If you're going to put it in two words, everything that you say is going to produce a constructive result. Everything that you do, and I mean everything, in every area of activity, economics, education, entertainment, labor, I mean on the job and all like that, everything you do, law, if you're in a courtroom, everything that you say is going to produce a constructive result. Either if you're a juror, or you're on the witness stand, or you're a judge, or you're a lawyer, everything that you say is going to produce a codified constructive result. That's in law. In politics, if you're a politician, everything that you say, you don't waste words. You just throw something out there and hope that it works. No, you're precise with everything that you do. I mean, everything that you say, so that it produces a constructive result. And everything that you do as a politician, and we're all politicians, by the way, according to what? Counter-racist logic. Because what is a politician? A people that interacts with other people. And all the people that I've ever known or heard about interacted with other people. Because even when you're born, you're interacting with your mother. You're born from somebody. So somebody's around when you're born. So even as a baby, you're interacting. You're a politician when you're born. See, I'm talking about using logic now in answer to your question. Always use logic. Every move that you make has to be a logical move.
Right. And hold that thought right there, Neely Fuller. We got to take a short break. We're cruising to the top of the hour. So some of our stations have to identify themselves down the line per the FCC. Stations like FM 95.9 and AM 1450. WOL, where information is power.
The Carl Nelson Show.
You're rocking with the most awesomest.
On 1450 and 95.9.
You're rocking with the most awesomest.
Worldwide at WOLDCnews.com.
You're rocking with the most awesomest. All right, let's go.
And thank you for staying with us, folks. Our guest is Neely Fuller Jr. Call up a couple of your friends. There's still time. And tell them that Neely Fuller Jr. is on the radio. Going to learn a lot. We're talking about the code. That's the short title of his book. He'll tell you about his book and how you can pick up a copy of his book. And also, we got a word from the newsroom here that the jury has reached a verdict in the case against Jussie Smollett. He's charged with lying about a racist attack. He saw the Empire Star back in Chicago. This was back in January of 2019. As soon as the jury comes back and announces that, we'll let you know. But let's go back to Neely Fuller Jr. Again, I got to caution you. You've got to listen real careful when he says, because he uses logic, as he mentioned, cause and effect, and uses a lot of metaphors as well. So lean in and get some knowledge today. 800-450-7876. If you've got a question, that's how you raise your hand and reach Neely Fuller Jr. So, Brother Neely Fuller Jr., I'll let you continue telling us about this code that we should be aware of.
Yes, I mean, well, that's what the whole my whole thing is, because I said that's the missing link in everything that black people have been doing all over the world. When it comes to somebody mentioned something about racism and our racism and our white supremacy, et cetera, et cetera. And it took me quite a while. I guess I was around 30 years old. I'm in my 90s now. But in my 30s, I just kind of stumbled upon it. And I looked around at what everybody was doing and saying, and I looked at what the white supremacists were doing and saying and how they went about doing things, and it just came to me. I say they got an exact way of doing everything when it comes to black people. They don't leave no wiggle room at all. I mean, it's very precise and it's very efficient. And we can't figure out how they do it. It's like magic, but it's not magic. Unless you want to say science is magic, could be. There is a science to magic, I guess. Magic is codified, taking rabbits out of a hat. And the white supremacists seem to be able to do that. They just twist black people around their little finger like it's nothing. And black people are not even aware of what's going on. And when they do become aware, it's 50 years too late. And that show has been long over. Everybody's left the theater. So I said, we don't have anything similar to what they have put together. We haven't even gotten started. We're not even in the kindergarten stage. And this is back in the 1950s when I came to that conclusion. And so I said, what we need is a code. Like an electrical code, a plumbing code. Today, I had to have a plumber come in today. And the plumbers looked around, and they came to fix a stove. And first thing they did was looked at it. And that's the first thing you do in codifying anything. You look at the situation quietly, keep everybody quiet, stand, look. Look and look, and then finally say, I think I see what the problem is. So finally figured out what the problem was, and he told me what it was in technical language, codified mechanics language, and he left. And when I tried to work the oven, it was the oven I was having problems with. I couldn't get any heat. I got heat out of the oven. Why? He knew the code for that oven. I didn't know it. So therefore, I couldn't get it to work. It's a code for everything that works. I came up on that in the 1950s, and when I tried to tell people about it, and that's what kind of amazed me then, but it doesn't amaze me now because I just don't have an explanation for that. People don't get it at all. But black people, like the beginning of this program today, they understand it when I start. I think they understand it when I say that musicians have a code. It's called sheet music. Some people learn the code without even being able to read music. They just learn it by, you know, like I think it's Confucius, who said the way to learn to play the flute is to play the flute. So there are a lot of musicians who said, I just picked up the flute and started playing it. I picked up the guitar and started playing it. Little by little, I was playing the guitar. I couldn't read a note of sheet music, but I know when somebody's off key or something like that. I just know it. I know the code for playing a guitar. I don't know the code for playing a trumpet. You know, I have to practice that and find out. And it's the same way when it comes to ending racism. But when you talk to people about it, including scholars, and I've been doing it for years, I mean, people with PhDs, they don't even understand the concept of a codified approach to racism when they understand the codified approach to everything else. And that's what amazes me. Or rather, it used to. It doesn't anymore. I just say that maybe we got a mental block. Because I talk to professors and have talked to them for years. And they say, code? What are you talking about? And I explain it in what you call farmer's language. You know, you plant a seed and the apples come up. Okra didn't come up. Why? You didn't plant an okra seed. Duh.
All right. 800-450-7876. Walter's back. Walter, are you got a better phone for us now? You have a question for Neely Fuller Jr.?
Yes. I have a question. Why are so many pigs are perfectly voluntary? Piss. There's nothing wrong with them. If they're not fine, then the sinners girl get involved in it. And then they're going to come from the White House. They try to play, make everybody do it, but then they got to go to the sinner to do it. Look, nobody appears to me. Well, something I know that I already went through as a child, and we always stay as a child. People got to call everything but a child of God. I may also be a man of few words. And you want another thing. Arnold and Porter is when it's through St. Elizabeth to get that stuff started over there, okay? Remember them, Arnold and Porter, industrial lawyers. Thank you. Have a good day. Peace. I mean, it's nice, but
yeah, thank you, Walter. Neely Fuller Jr., did you detect a question in there, what he said?
No. So, since he didn't ask a question, I hope people heard whatever he said and think about it. People are supposed to think about everything that everybody says. Think about it. Because it might be a gem in there somewhere or something that you can codify and use. You never can tell.
Let me jump in here and ask a question, because you says we need a code. Do we need a code to deal with the other folks, or do we need a code to deal with each other?
We need a code for everything. Nothing in the universe works without a code. Now, I'll explain it again, like I did at the beginning of this program and all the programs. Code, what does code mean? It's not a secret or anything. There are some codes that are secret because people keep them secret. But an electrical code, a plumbing code, a building code, it means that when you do it, it works. That's all that it means. And I try to explain it to people who are supposed to be scholars. And if I put it in another context, they instantly get it. But if I talk about racism and say you have to have a counter-racist code to counter a racist code, there's no understanding at all. There's no comprehension at all with most people. A few people get it, particularly the people in the engineering field. I found that out down through the years. But people in philosophy, people who majored in philosophy and even psychiatry and the field of what you call people interacting with people, they don't seem to understand a codified approach to interacting with people at all. When I put it in the context of racism, I mean, it seems baffling. When to me, it just sort of fell into my brain. I mean, it was so logical. Because I'd run out of options of being frustrated, because that's what brought it on. And I say, oh, so I studied the white supremacists. That's the first thing I looked at. I looked at the problem, or the people I suspected of being white supremacists. I say, oh, he's got a certain way of talking to me. That when he's around white people, he don't talk that way. But when he talks to me, he got a special way of talking. He got a code for talking to me, because I'm black. And if you're a white supremacist, you don't talk the same way. You don't say the same things. You're not consistent. You got a code, a part of your code. If you're a white supremacist, the part that helps to strengthen the system of white supremacy, all of it, and that means that you got a certain way to even talk to white people that you never talk to black people that same way or say the same things the same way, except when you tailor it in, or kind of have the nuances that will go in a direction that will give strength, not weakness, to the system of white supremacy.
Hold that thought right there. Yeah, hold that thought right there. We got to take a short break. I'll let you finish on the other side. Folks, you want to join us? Nina Fuller's on the radio. Call up a couple of your friends. Let them know. They'll thank you. Reach out to us, though. 800-450-7876 gets you in. We'll take your calls next as the big show rolls on from Radio 1's flagship station. We're on FM 95.9 and AM 1450 WOL, where information is power. And thanks for staying with us, folks. Our guest is Neely Fuller Jr. We're talking about The Code. That's a partial title of his workbook. It'll tell you how to get his book. And now, and maybe if you got some questions, you can, you know, read the book, and or you can raise your hand in the class right now by dialing us up at 800-450-7876. We'll go back to you, though. I just remind you, the jury has reached a verdict in the case against actor Jesse Smollett from Empire Fame. He was charged with lying about a racist attack. As soon as that announced, we'll let you know. Neely Fuller Jr., before I take another call for you, though, how do we get a code? What is it that we have to do to get a code, and how do we maintain to stay on code?
Well, after years of carrying a whole bunch of stuff around in a suitcase, Dr. Francis Chris Wilson used to talk about it all the time. I had a whole lot of notes in a suitcase, and it got to be so... The suitcase got to be so much stuff in it, so many notes, sheets of paper, newspapers, I mean, that I had written in the corners of and all like that. And I was going around making talks with that suitcase, and finally I decided I'm going to try to squeeze this into some kind of book, and I got to do it in a hurry because I don't know how long I'm going to last. And that's why I say it's one of the sloppiest written counter-racist works ever produced on a press. But it's, I did the best that I could. And people can get it by going to producejustice.com. And so that's the first step that I would say that will probably help people to have some idea, along with listening to things like the Carl Nelson Show when I'm on, and I guess when other people are on too. Anything that has to do with countering racism is a part of the code. That's another thing I want to make clear. If it works, it's automatically a part of the code. What code? Neely Fuller's code? No, Neely Fuller doesn't have a code. Neely Fuller recognizes that there is a code for everything that works. So anything that works against racism and for justice. And so you can, I want to make that clear so that people get a better understanding of what I mean by code. If it works for justice, that's code. Even if racism isn't mentioned. Like in the schools now, they're saying, don't mention racism. Don't mention nothing about white supremacy. It makes the white children feel guilty. It makes them nervous. It makes the mothers of white children angry. I'm hearing this now. So, I'm saying, in other words, you're saying it's not working. And I'm quite sure they'll agree. No, it's not working. It's not working for us white people. And if we're going to teach anything and have black people in the schools with white people, we want to teach something that works for everybody. And so then what you do is just say, okay, I won't talk about race. The code says that. You only talk about race to people who want to talk about race. So what do you talk about under the compensatory code? That's why I call it compensatory, meaning making up for what's missing. So what's missing is we're not going to talk about race in the schools? No, we're not going to talk about it. We're not going to have it. Now what you going to do, Negro? Well, I won't talk about it because you're in charge, so I can't talk about it. What will I talk about it? Well, just talk about things other than race. Okay. Can I talk about justice? Yes, you can talk about justice. We believe in justice. No problem. And the code, the textbook for victims of white supremacy, cells. That's why I say we need a code. How you can talk about race simply by talking about justice without ever even mentioning race. That's what I'm talking about. That's why I say we need a code. Because a lot of black people now are nervous about how we're going to get around talking about race without having a shouting match and a cursing match and a shutting down the classroom. I say, hey, under a compensatory code, code means you take care of every situation. I don't care what it is. And what you do will work. Otherwise, it ain't code no way if it ain't working. That's why we need something that's absolutely reliable. And you can get the beginning of it, some ideas, by listening to programs like this and similar to this, and also get the textbook for Victims of White Supremacy by Neely Fuller. That'll give you some kind of start. You can get it by going to producejustice.com. Producejustice.com. What will come up on the screen is a brief description. There'll be three volumes there. The 2016 Revised Expanded Edition is the basic volume. I call that, that's the basic. Then there's an additional volume there. I say it's all the same book, but I couldn't get it all in the same book. So it's a separate volume. That's a separate price, too. I couldn't avoid that. But it's a word guide showing you what words to use, what words not to use, what words to ask questions about when other people use them. How to ask the questions, and examples of the questions to ask, even in relationships between, for example, in the area of sex, because the book is segmented into areas of activity. The eighth area in it is sex. So it talks about the questions that should be asked when a black male is talking to a black female, and it seems like their quote-unquote relationship is headed toward the bedroom. It's about 150 questions, maybe more. I think it's 175 if I counted correctly, that should be asked and answered before you get anywhere close to that act of what we call the first act of sexual intercourse. And the reasons for this are given. But everything in the code book is optional, meaning it's democratic in the pure sense of the word democracy. Another thing, nothing in the code book is secretive. The white supremacists have a code that's secretive. They have to have secrets. Non-white people don't need secrets of any kind, so we don't have a secret code. Our code is for everybody to examine. Otherwise, why would I put it in a book? The white supremacists probably, more white supremacists have probably read my book than black people. Because they stay on top of everything that black people do.
Nice, do. Okay, we got some more folks who want to talk to you. 800-450-7876. Anthony's calling from Buffalo. Anthony's online too. Anthony, you're on with Neely Fuller Jr. You have a question for him?
Yes, I wanted to ask Mr. Fuller about the RBG flag. I know that Mr. Fuller has said in the past that he has his own flag that has a question mark on it, but I've never heard him speak on the flag that's red for the blood, black for the skin, and green for the land. I really like this flag, and I feel like it's important to us, but I know that's my VGQ, Victims Guarantee Qualified, but could you speak on that flag if you have any experience or any thoughts on it, Mr. Fuller? Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, my thoughts on flags is what's in the textbook, and that is any flag, that I look at, I pledge my allegiance to it. but I have a pledge that's not the standard pledge that a person would take to whatever flag they choose to pledge their allegiance to. But I take the universal pledge that will apply to any flag, anywhere, at any time, including the one that you're talking about, and I haven't even seen it. But I'm already in allegiance with that flag, according to the code. Because what is the pledge? I will give it to you. The compensatory flag, universal, compensatory universal pledge to a flag. I will give it now. It is as follows, and it's in the textbook for victims of white supremacy, too. I do at all times relate to the flag the exact same way that the flag relates to me. Now, if I'm on a football field and all like that, some people who take a knee or whatever, they can do that according to the code. Why? Because that's what they chose to do. I can't pass judgment on that. But if I was standing there on the field as a football player, I would just say, oh, you want me to take a pledge to the flag? Where's the flag? Well, what do you want me to do? You want me to take the pledge? Or what do you want me to do? You want me to stand? Now, do you want me to say something or just stand? You know, but if you want me to use words now, I have a pledge ready. And I haven't even seen the flag. I can be in Brazil or Uruguay or Rio or Ecuador or Finland. I mean, I take the same pledge. And that pledge will be, I do at all times relate to the flag, meaning this flag, if I can see it, the exact same way that the flag relates to me. And I don't think there'll ever be a flag pledge that will be better than that one. And you're telling the truth.
Yeah. Hold that thought right there. We've got to take another short break. And we come back, too. We'll have the verdict in the Jesse Smollett trial for you folks. 800-450-7876. Speak to Neely Fuller Jr. Your call's next on FM 95.9 and AM 1450 WOL, where information is power. And thanks for staying with us, folks. Our guest is Neely Fuller Jr. And I'll tell you, it's one of these shows that whatever he's on, you've got to listen really, really keenly to what he's saying. It's explaining the code and why we need a code and how the system of racism and white supremacy works. And it's the key word in that phrase is the system. So check it out. Keep your ear locked into that speaker now, because he uses logic, cause and effect. And he uses a lot of metaphors, too, to prove his point. Still got time to call up a couple of your friends and tell them that Neely Fuller Jr. is on the radio. Before we get back to those, I mentioned that the jury has come back with its rendering in the trial of Jesse Smollett. And after 10 hours of deliberation, the Chicago jury has found Jesse Smollett guilty on 5 of the 6 counts for filing a false police report. He reported a hoax, a racist attack. He suffered at the hands of 2 men. But this was back in January of 2019. So Jesse Smollett, the actor from Empire, guilty on 5 of those 6 accounts for filing a false police report. 800-450-7876. And back to Neely Fuller. Ellis is calling us. He's on line 3. He's in New Jersey. Ellis, your question for Neely Fuller Jr.
Yes, thank you very much. Mr. Fuller, I know you said in the past that white supremacy is the is a dominant and ideology in the world today, and I agree with that. But there was a time when Europeans didn't even bathe, and when Africans were the dominant, way of dealing with the societies. How do you explain the fact that you could say that they were always dominant, Europeans, when they were not?
I'll answer the question.
Mm-hmm.
I have never said that, ever.
Okay. Well, I'm sorry if I misunderstood you, but I thought you said that many times.
No. People have asked me, when did white supremacists start? And my answer has always been, I don't know. I know what I've heard. Some people have said 400 years. Some people have said 600. Some people have said no, 2,000. Other people have said no, at least 8,000. And recently I heard 800,000 is when it really started, when the first white person looked at a person of color and say, I am going to start mistreating you on account of your color. Now, I don't know anything about the history of white supremacy, except it's here. And I'm saying that's the only thing that's important to me, is trying to figure out how to replace it with the system of justice. How long it's been around, who is the first person who invented it or came up with the idea of what all of the great empires and civilizations that came before white supremacy, I know nothing about. And that's not the thing that I ever went in that direction to do. And I've let people know that. I've talked to Dr. Ben. I've talked to Dr. Ivan Van Sertima. I've talked to briefly to Dr. Chancellor Williams, John Henry Clark. These are people that I've talked to up close and personal, sometimes over a period of many years. But I have never even raised questions to any of them myself about history. I say, go to the historians for that. But I have said, white supremacy is here now. It's here now, and all I want to do is deal with what's here now. And that goes to my very fiber. I say, it's tons of people who can go back 40 trillion years ago. And I say that questions like that should be addressed to them, because Neely Fuller got no idea. I don't have an idea about a whole lot of things that happened 15 minutes ago.
Well, yes, that's important, because if myself as an elder and others, youngsters, if they have no idea of no chance of becoming more than what they are, kings and queens, then why would they even want to consider anything else?
Well, I'll answer that question according to the code. See, I'm just going according to logic. What was I before I was born? See, each person has a history. Each person has a history. Now, the history we know about each person, and as far as I know, other people know a whole lot more, I guess, but I'm not in that category. But I do know that there is such a thing as people being born. Now, a person being born has a history, and that history goes back before they were born. The molecules that all came together. Everything that makes a person when a baby comes from the womb. The question is, where was that baby before that womb was even there? That's the history of that baby, because that baby comes from a womb. A baby calf, a baby person. And you say that's the origin. But is that the only origin? No. There was something that came together long before what you're looking at.
That's the ancestral realm.
So I'm in answer to the question according to the code now. This is codified logic. That's why I say all I do is code, which means what I do always makes sense. I'm just going to deal with something that can always make sense. Otherwise, if it doesn't make sense, I ain't supposed to be fooling with it no way. All right, but these are things that I have bore witness to. I have looked at my baby pictures, and I have evolved. So in answer to the question, how do you tell a young black person about racism and get them to deal with racism unless they know something about their past? And that past has to show that at one time, black people did something great.
Well, that's
and I have said, I just want to answer the question, sir.
Okay, I'm sorry.
I'm saying that's a false ideology based on evidence, because there's a lot of people that have been on this planet who weren't on this planet before, as far as they know, that didn't do anything great, couldn't find anything in their history where anybody in their family did anything great, solved any kind of problem, and that person is what some people call geniuses.
Wow.
They're born all the time. And they just take the information that they have. When they come into the world, they come into the world not knowing anything, as far as we know. And so they don't walk around talking about what their ancestors did 3 million years ago. They talk about, hey, I'm going to make an airplane. Ain't nobody never made one before me. But I ain't waiting on nobody to make one. And nobody has to show me an example of somebody trying to make one. I'm going to make one. And that has actually happened.
So would you say that most African cultures which believe in the ancestral realm is fantasy or not believable?
I am not saying that at all, sir. What I'm saying is I'm raising a question, because I said all problems are solved, and racism is a problem, through the process of questions and answers. That's a universal law, according to logic. All problems are solved through the process of questions and answers. So the question is, how much of history do I need to know in order to solve a problem? Then it comes down to what problem you're trying to solve, Fuller, which is dumb self. I say, well, I'm trying to figure out how to walk across the street. Now, how much history of my ancestors walking across the street do I need to know? How many ancestors do I have to dig up out of the grave, look through some artifacts, and find out how to walk across this street that I'm standing on? And somebody might say, well, the way to walk across this street is to just start walking. Do you know how to walk? I say, yeah, I know how to walk. Well, put one foot in front of the other, Fuller, which is silly self, and I'll point you in the direction, and you will find yourself across the street. Now, how much history did you need to know of how many people walked across the street before you could walk across the street?
But that's what
logic of the code.
But that's what discovery is about.
Black people have said, well, I know 200 years of black history. And another professor will say, that's not enough in order to deal with racism. You got to know 800 years of black history. And then another one will say, no, that ain't even a good start. You better know 5 million years of black history in order to deal with that white person that you're going to be dealing with on the job today.
But we got to take a break,
so I'm going to let you go.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Yeah, all right. Thank you. Anyway, we've got some more folks want to talk to Neely Fuller Jr. Folks, you too can join us. Reach out to us, 800-450-7876. Let me give that number again. It's 800-450-7876. And I keep telling you, you got to listen real keen, because Neely Fuller uses logic, cause and effect, to prove his points. And he speaks a lot in metaphor. So really, let's lean into that speaker or earpiece. 800-450-7876. Again, those are the numbers. Your call's next on FM 95.9 and AM 1450.
WOL, where information is power.
Thanks for rolling with us, folks. Our guest is Neely Fuller Jr. He's discussing The Code. That's the short title of his book. He'll tell you later before he goes the full title and how to pick up a copy. If you want to understand how racism and white supremacy works, this is the man you need to reach out to. Again, we're in a class session here, so you just dial us up, raise your hand by doing that at 800-450-7876. Before we do that, though, just the news bulletin that came over earlier today, the Chicago jury has found actor Jussie Smollett guilty on 5 of 6 counts of filing a false police report, all this related to the hoax racist attack that he claimed he suffered at the hands of 2 men back in January of 2019. Now, tomorrow's Friday, as you all know, and then we invite you to free your mind, think for yourself, and join us on our Open Phone Friday program. We start promptly at 4 p.m. Eastern Time right here on FM 95.9 and AM 1450 WOL. All right, let's take some more calls from Mr. Fuller. Johnny's calling us from Long Beach in California. He's on line 4. Johnny, you're on with Neely Fuller Jr.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. How are you doing, Mr. Fuller?
I'm still learning.
Okay, and I am too. Mr. Fuller, could a code be just having a, you know, because what I'm about to say, the code should cover justice, having mutual respect for people, for human beings. Would that be a code that I could use?
Could the code be what?
Could the code be just having mutual respect for human beings? Could that be one of the codes?
Depends on what you want to see. You use two words. I'll just go according to what the code says about that.
Okay.
You said mutual respect. What does that mean? See, words only mean what you say that they mean. That's why I have a word guide, a counter-racist word guide, where I make up words. People, when I first started doing it, said, "Well, you just can't go around making up words." I said, "All words are made up. Now, am I lying or telling the truth?" And people found out it was the truth. All words are made up. I mean, at one time, there was no such thing as hip-hop. But somebody made it up. At one time, somebody said rap. Well, you know, they say, well, rap what? You know, wrap up a sausage in a piece of paper or whatnot. Say, no, I'm talking about rap music. They said, well, what is rap music? Whatever I say it is, I made it up. Somebody started that. So you can make up words all the time. So it's nothing mysterious. So you said mutual respect. Now, what is it about mutual respect that a black person would need that's in the form of something called mutual respect in order to get a constructive result? Because that's all you're looking for, theoretically and practically, a mutual result. So what would you say mutual respect is?
We may not like each other.
You may not like each other. Okay.
No, right. I'm saying we may not like each other, but it's, you don't, you know, it's like, so, okay. I lost my thought there for a second. No, what I'm trying to say is that the mutual respect is, you may not like me, but you should, you are going to respect me.
Okay. We've gone from liking to mutual respect, and now we are in respect. Well, I'll just tell you what the code book says about respect.
Okay.
Now, have you heard it?
No,
Have you heard me say what respect is according to the code?
No.
Respect is refusing to lie to yourself. So it's impossible to get respect from somebody else. That's the definition in the textbook for victims of white supremacy. That's all that I have to say about respect, except to embellish that definition. I gave a compensatory definition to the word respect because I kept hearing say, black people say, they absolutely had to have it. And I said, okay, if it's something you absolutely have to have in order to breathe, in order to walk across the street, in order to get a job, you got to have respect or something awful is going to happen. And people would say, yeah. But then I'd ask him, well, what is it? And that's why I asked you, what is it? You said, you started off saying, it doesn't have anything to do with who you like, but it has something to do with something you got to get, and you got to get it from somebody else. And I'm saying, what is it that you got to get from somebody else, this magic thing called respect? Because the code is exact. I mean, like mathematics, like 1 and 1 is 2, everything has to be explained in detail. So I'm just asking for, you know, different people got different views of what words mean. But in the code book that I have written, respect means refusing to tell yourself a lie. You know, in other words, that's something you don't do. You might be forced to lie to somebody else at gunpoint, but you never lie to yourself. That's getting rid of respect, because there's not but one kind of respect according to the code, and that's self-respect. It's impossible to get it from somebody else. It can't be done, because it just involves you. It don't have nothing to do with nobody else. It's impossible for anybody to disrespect me. That can't be done. I don't care how they go at it. They can do that. They can try. They can set up with a committee of people of 10 million, of the best minds on the planet. I'm talking about me, Neely Fuller. The best minds on the planet can sit up and say, we got it. We got it now. We spent 10 million man hours nailing it down of how we're going to show disrespect to Neely Fuller. And when all 10 million of those scholars line up, and each one of them give them, you know, whatever they say, is say, we're going to show you how we're going to disrespect you. And they do it in a way that, I guess, I don't know, other than shoot me. Of course, they shoot me. I mean, you know, do you call that disrespect? I mean, you know, well, hey, I just got shot. I don't even need a word. You don't need a word called respect to shoot somebody. I mean, so I'm saying if it has to do with words, if you lie on me or something like that, that doesn't have anything to do with disrespect. That's what you call lying. You said something that wasn't true. And all I got to do is say something that is true. And it just depends on what people want to believe. But if you're talking about this magical thing that everybody seems to be so upset about, and like it's something that you got to go and dig up under the ground and find it, and you got to hide it from everybody and just let it out every now and then. I mean, this thing called respect, and black people have been talking about it forever. And I've said, I don't need it under no circumstance. I mean, you can disrespect me all day long. I mean, if you say, hey, I'm going to disrespect you, well, Fuller, and I will say, well, how are you going to disrespect me? I'm telling you I'm disrespecting you. 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 See, I'm looking for, what are you doing? You're just saying you're disrespecting me. Okay, I got it. But what has that got to do with anything? See, that's what I mean by taking control of words. Black people go crazy about somebody else's words. I've seen it all of the time I've been on this planet. And I say, you know what? All we got to do is codify how we look at words. And how we react to words. and we become masters of words. I don't care what kind of word it is. And sometimes being a master of words calls for you to do what? Go completely silent. I told somebody that on my on the podcast yesterday, day before yesterday. Because somebody asked me, Fuller, suppose somebody, and I'm still talking about what you're talking about, suppose somebody comes up, you're walking with your mother, and they call your mother a bitch. Right in front of everybody. They didn't add that, but I'm adding it. Because that's usually when we really get upset. When a whole lot of people's around and somebody calls you a name or calls somebody close to you, you consider, quote, unquote, close to you, a name. I said, I'd say absolutely nothing. And if my mother's codified, she'd say absolutely nothing. Why? Because it works, that's why. See, codification is about, you don't make a move, ever, unless it works for you, every time, and never works against you, anytime. And I say, hey, that's an easy one. Not only that name, but any list of names. If they go home and spend 60 days or 60 years making up a long list, and meet me and my mother at the bus stop and go down that list of names that they have made up, my reaction, according to the code, would be the same. Say absolutely nothing. Period. Mm.
Look, nearly full of almost the end of the show, and we got people holding for you. But I want you to tell folks how we can get your book. And folks, if you didn't learn anything today, I hope you learned what he just said. How can we get a copy of your book?
You can get a copy of the book by going to producejustice.com. Producejustice.com. And what will come up on the screen is a brief description of each one of the volumes, because it's three volumes there. One is the original that came out in 1984. And, of course, a lot of paperwork came back, going all the way back to the 1950s, but this particular book, 1984, was the first time it was formalized in book form. Now, the 2016 edition is an update, a revised, expanded edition of the 1984 edition. The 1984 edition has a computer design on it because codification, counter-racist codification, is science. It works like a computer. But my writing is easy to understand for most people. I hope, I'd like to write at the fifth grade level.
And it is a very, very good book. And so we got to thank you, Neely Fuller Jr. And thank you for doing the book. And thank you for all the information you shared with us today. Folks, we got to run and apologize. Apologize to the folks who were left on hold. But you got to call early when Neely Fuller is on the radio. Anyway, we're out of here. Stay strong, stay positive. Please stay healthy. We'll see you Monday. Also, actually tomorrow, right here on FM 95.9 and AM 1450. WOL, where information is power.